Hello there. My name's David Poole, and I'm the Associate Editor representing the Journal of Applied Physiology. We're going to discuss a paper published recently entitled Effective Exercise Timing on Elevated Postprandial Glucose Levels. This was identified by the editorial board as especially important. The authors are Drs. Hatamoto, Goya, Yamada, Yoshimura, Nashimura, Higaki, and Tanaka. Senior author, Dr. Hiroki Tanaka, professor at Fukuoka University, Japan, and director of the Institute for Physical Activity, will represent his team. Our expert discussant is Dr. Stephanie Curti, assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Hiroki, please give us a brief outline of your paper, especially the novel aspects of how the timing of exercise impacts glucose handling after a meal.
High postprandial blood glucose increases risk for cardiovascular disease in both type 2 diabetes patients and healthy people. So it is important to know how best to reduce it. There are different approaches to reduce postprandial glucose, and one of them is acute exercise, but it is unknown what time is the best. For example, pre-meal or post-meal exercise, or whether brief exercise bouts spaced throughout the day are more effective. We demonstrate that brief periodic exercise throughout the day attenuated peak postprandial blood glucose more than just pre- or postprandial exercise, particularly in the morning. Additionally, postprandial glucose rebound soon after discontinuing postprandial exercise. That brief periodic exercise may be better than pre- and postprandial exercise attenuating PPG levels.
Stephanie, could you please remind us of the importance of this problem, especially given the burgeoning diabetic population in the Western world? What do you consider to be the most crucial or relevant findings of this paper?
As most of us know, type 2 diabetes is an enormous public health problem in westernized countries. And as a reminder to the listeners, diabetes is characterized by inadequate glycemic control coming from dysfunctional insulin action. There are numerous comorbidities that may result from lower glycemic control. These include coronary artery disease, neuropathy, nephropathy, and retinopathy. In addition, there's a large economic burden of both diagnosed and undiagnosed diabetes. So it's important for the listener to recognize that the assessment of postprandial fluctuations in glucose, which was used in the study, is actually a better predictor of cardiovascular diseases than glycosylated hemoglobin, or HbA1c, and fasting glucose. Considering medications are expensive and they don't have a large effect on postprandial glucose, exercise is a low-cost and effective way to improve glucose control. Diabetics are currently told to live a healthy lifestyle for glucose management and engage in regular physical activity, and current guidelines for physical activity suggest individuals obtain at least 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity per week. While we're aware that exercise is effective for lowering postprandial glycemia, the next step is to determine the exercise timing that most effectively mitigates postprandial glycemia. So the most crucial and relevant findings were that brief periodic exercise was more beneficial than both pre- and postprandial exercise in lowering postprandial glycemia. If these results are duplicated in an at-risk and diabetic population, that has substantial public health implications for how we can promote exercise.
Hiroki, why do you think neither pre- nor postprandial exercise reduced blood glucose peaks? Previous work has shown that this should happen, and the experimental design specifically avoided exercise for 3 days to prevent insulin sensitization.
One of the reasons is exercise duration. In our study, exercise duration was 20 minutes, which is much shorter than 60 minutes of cycling studied previously. The other possible reason is that the subjects in our study were young, active, and healthy males. They are likely to have good blood glucose metabolism, in which case there is no significant reduction of blood glucose.
is there any information regarding whether GLUT4 mechanisms for muscle glucose uptake are impacted differently depending on the type or the timing of exercise relative to meal times?
There's a paper by Chen et al. In diabetes comparing exercise intensity with skeletal muscle AMPK activated protein kinase, AMPK. Increasing AMPK levels increase glucose transport by stimulating GLUT4 translocation to the cell surface in the muscle. A moderate or high exercise intensities stimulated activation of AMPK. There is no certain information concerning the timing, but we speculate that GLUT4 mechanisms are impact in same way every time exercise is performed. Frequent nature of activity bouts we use may regulate translocation of glucose transporter protein GLUT4 more effectively.
One of the things that I really enjoyed about this paper was the fact that the exercise intensities were used was very light, about 60% of VO2 max. And the short bursts are the kinds of things that folks can build into their daily activity. I've heard comments made that, well, if instead of sitting in a chair for as many hours as certainly academics tend to, if we, for example, have a remote printer two or three floors away from us in a building and we walk up and down the stairs, you know, frequently, that might be the kind of exercise program that you found was effective here. Stephanie, as a public health message, how would you use this information to advise the at-risk individual regarding their activity pattern and incorporating this principle into their daily routine?
I think we certainly need to first determine whether these results can be extrapolated to the diabetic and at-risk populations, especially with consideration to maintaining the same energy balance in all conditions. And it's also important that future studies, leisure time physical activity is the same in all conditions. But still, if these results are replicated, then asking diabetic individuals to take short breaks of intermittent exercise throughout their day as a method to improve glucose control may seem more manageable to them than asking them to perform continuous exercise. So we have the opportunity as researchers and clinicians to provide more information to the patient regarding how they can make an exercise regimen possible rather than simply telling them to change their lifestyle. Intermittent accumulation of exercise throughout the day may be another method to lower glucose and can therefore reach more individuals. We can encourage the individual to focus on accumulating their time of exercise rather than advising them to perform a single session of exercise for, say, 30 minutes, 5 days a week. Since time constraints are a major barrier to engaging in exercise, intermittent exercise could be a way to overcome that barrier.
Hiroki, how do you think the responses would have looked for very fit or active individuals?
I think the results would be quite similar. Active individuals have a better glucose metabolism, so their blood glucose probably wouldn't be high. They also have a high fitness level, and their LT intensity is between 70 to 80% VO2 max. If they perform exercise at LT intensity, energy expenditure and glucose effectiveness are higher compared to regular people. It leads to lower glucose level.
In terms of cardiovascular health, please compare and contrast the putative benefits of improved exercise-induced glucose regulation.
High postprandial glucose concentration is a risk for cardiovascular disease. Endothelial dysfunction is predictable of future cardiovascular events and caused by hyperglycemia through oxidative stress. Furthermore, oscillating glucose level increase oxidative stress more than constant high glucose levels and have a more deleterious effect on endothelial dysfunction. For these reasons, controlling PPG levels may lead to cardiovascular event prevention.
What do you consider is the logical next step in this work?
We would like to do a similar study in diabetic patients. We would also like to verify durability of acute exercise effects in a longer time frame.
Stephanie, is there anything that you'd like to add regarding mechanistic interpretations?
While the precise mechanisms contributing to improved glycemic control with various exercise timing and duration are not well characterized, there are several ways in which exercise improves postprandial glycemia. Exercise improves glucose uptake in the skeletal muscle, and even after short-term exercise, GLUT4 protein content is increased. During and after an exercise bout, there's also increased translocation of GLUT4 to cell membranes, increasing glucose uptake. Also, blood glucose is going to be used at a higher rate during exercise simply to provide energy for the exercise bout. In addition, exercise improves beta cell function, translating to improved glucose control. Finally, it's worth noting that exercise also improves insulin sensitivity in the liver and decreases glucose output, ultimately reducing postprandial glycemia. Many researchers doing seminal work in this area also believe other mechanisms in tissues may improve glucose control. However, future research is needed to identify these mechanisms.
Hiroki, do you have any closing comments for the audience?
Our general message we can all draw from this study is try slow jogging, running with a smile, whenever we have time in our daily lives. Accumulating short periods, even 1 minute of such a light intensity exercise throughout the day, is beneficial for lowering blood glucose and weight control.
Stephanie.
While there is still much more work that needs to be done investigating exercise and glucose control in diabetics and an at-risk population, I think it is important to recognize the various studies determining possible exercise timing and length of exercise bouts that may help to manage glucose levels. We need to continue understanding the possibility of employing different strategies to see what's most manageable for the patient, and is ultimately going to help refine the advice that we're giving our patients with regard to exercise.
I'd like to thank Hiroki and your colleagues for your beautiful study, and Stephanie for putting it in some wonderful context for us today. So thank you both.